This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Heard every Sunday night from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler. Hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come warm yourself by the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. We're going to delve into a fascinating area tonight, the Galactic Federation. Dr. Michael Sala is with us. He's a pioneer in the development of exopolitics, the author of, 12 books, that include Kennedy's Last Stand, Galactic Diplomacy. He was an assistant professor and researcher in residence in the School of International Service at the American University from 1996 to 2004. He has a PhD in government from the University of Queensland, Australia. And he's also the founder of the Exopolitics Institute, a nonprofit organization that analyzes the political implications of the extraterrestrial presence. Most recently, he's the author of Space Force, Our Star Trek Future, which is the sixth book in his Secret Space Program series. Dr. Sala, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show, Richard.
Let's just start with a basic overview. When we're talking about the Galactic Federation, what are we talking about here?
Well, we're talking about an organization, an association of extraterrestrial civilizations, which has a particular set of goals that is embraced by all members. So this is analogous to how we get organizations on Earth, like the United Nations, the European Union, where you have member states accepting certain principles that they organize around. And it would be illogical to think that extraterrestrial civilizations would not have something similar happening. And of course, that's always been a issue that's been kind of like speculated about. I mean, there have been people that talked about it going all the way back to 1952, when there was the first reference to a galactic federation by one of the early contactees, which was Daniel Fry, and he talked about a galactic federation then. But what really got people talking about such an organization being relevant to our Earth today is statements by a Professor Haim Eshed in December of 2020, when he said that there was a galactic federation and it had made contact with the Trump administration. And while the Trump administration was wanting to disclose the existence of this organization, according to Eshed, he said that this galactic federation said the time wasn't yet right, that humanity still isn't ready because we don't have a sufficient level of technological sophistication to have this kind of like revealed to the planet. So apparently this is why Space Force is being accelerated, why they're really pushing the human presence into space, because I think the agenda is that eventually you can't stop the revelation that there are extraterrestrial civilizations visiting our planet, and that they are organized into organizations such as this Galactic Federation.
So Chaim Eshed, was he with the Israeli, the military, or he's kind of disappeared off the radar, but what is Chaim Eshed's, what was his position in Israel?
Well, he was the father of Israel's spy satellite program. So he was the guy that set it all up. I think it was from 1981 to around 2013 or 12, something like that. It was close to 30 years that he ran that spy satellite program, which really was something that would have put him within the purview of some of America's most secretive organizations, such as the National Reconnaissance Office. And because the National Reconnaissance Office has spy satellites out there pointed both towards the Earth and also away from the Earth, they would know about visiting extraterrestrial life. And so Eshed ran Israel's equivalent to the National Reconnaissance Office, where he actually had responsibility for sending up Israel's first spy satellites and maintaining these, and to like assess the intelligence data. You know, what are they picking up? I mean, it wasn't just a matter of earthbound spacecraft or earthbound aerospace vehicles. It was also stuff approaching the Earth that the spy satellites were monitoring. So that was his background. So he had a very significant history running the spy satellite program. He attained the rank of Brigadier General in the Israeli Defense Force. So this was a guy that was really up there in terms of high-level access. So if he's saying that there's a Galactic Federation that is monitoring the Earth and interacting with top officials within presidential administrations, then I think that's something that kind of like shows how important it is that we start to investigate this.
Right. And what I said, he kind of disappeared off the radar. I mean, is that accurate? I mean, I haven't heard. After he made that announcement, there was no sort of follow-up. There was no, journalists didn't go back to him and ask for, for clarification. He just sort of made the statement and that was it. And then, have we heard from him since?
Not as far as I'm aware. I mean, he gave an interview in Israel because his book had just been published in Hebrew. So as far as I know, it hasn't been translated yet into English. So he gave an interview, and that interview was translated into English and picked up by a number of Israeli news media. And that's where he was quoted saying that the Galactic Federation is monitoring the Earth and interacting with the Trump administration. But after that interview, he really just kind of dropped off the map. I mean, he is officially retired, so he is kind of pretty reclusive. And a lot of his scientific colleagues kind of said, well, he must have lost his marbles or something to be saying such nonsensical things. But others rallied to his defense and said, look, I know Professor Eshed and have spoken to him recently, and he's as lucid as they come. He hasn't lost his really acute understanding of what's happening around the place. So I think that they really rallied to his defense. But he himself has just pretty much dropped off the map and hasn't done any interviews in English, as far as I know. It's just that early one in Hebrew. And yeah, I think he put out the information and now he's just sitting back and watching the reaction.
Did he attempt to explain how he received this information? Is he a contactee? Did the Federation communicate with him telepathically, or was it just based on his own intelligence? Well, I think you froze there, Michael. I don't know if you can still hear me.
Very high level that Earth is being visited by extraterrestrial civilizations, and they are organized politically into groups such as this Galactic Federation. That would be very highly classified information. So he couldn't just straight out come out and say, well, The Israeli spy service has analyzed the data that we've collected, and we've made contact, or we have been briefed about contact. He would have to kind of like speak of it in a roundabout way, citing kind of public sources or open source literature, making out that, well, this is what's being said in the open source literature. So that's just a way the intelligence community operates, because you can't come out straight and say, well, I read this in a briefing, or this is what our own intelligence analysts are telling us from analyzing the data, because that's classified. You can't talk about that. But you can say, well, there are people talking about the Galactic Federation, and he mentioned the great granddaughter of President Eisenhower, Laura Eisenhower, and kind of like mentioned, well, you know, there are people like that talking about the Galactic Federation. And so that's how he kind of like was able to present it, as though he was just looking at open source literature and saying, yeah, in my opinion, there is a Galactic Federation. But I think, you know, given his high level and status, I think he was really just alluding to what he is officially aware of, but using open source information.
All right. So getting back to the Galactic Federation, how many, and these are all ET civilizations existing within the Milky Way, hence galactic. How many? Do we have a number? How many civilizations we're talking about? Is it 40? Is it thousands, tens of thousands?
What I've heard is it's in the hundreds. I mean, that does vary, but definitely it is an organization that has spacefaring extraterrestrial civilizations from all over our galaxy. And the really interesting thing here in looking at all of this is there have been claims made that this Galactic Federation has been working with U.S. Space Command and with the U.S. Navy going back to the 1950s. And one of the people that I interviewed and looked at very closely in terms of my Secret Space Program book series was a retired aerospace illustrator, engineer by the name of William Tompkins. And he talked about these Nordic extraterrestrials that were helping the U.S. Navy develop a space program, a secret space program in the 1950s. And his job was to help design some of these kilometer-long space carriers. And that was all being done in the 1950s, 60s. And these carriers were deployed in the 70s. Well, apparently he was saying that there were these groups of human-looking extraterrestrials, which today we can say pretty clearly that this was the Galactic Federation that was helping the U.S. Navy develop this. So, there's been a long history of development of the U.S. Navy secret space program by the Galactic Federation. And so then this is where you come into information that Gene Roddenberry was actually briefed about this Navy secret space program and about the existence of the Galactic Federation. And here's the thing that's really mind-blowing is because of the advanced technology, space-time technology that is used by extraterrestrials, that they were able to go back and either pick up Gene Roddenberry or someone else that worked with him in the development of the Star Trek franchise, which I believe was Leslie Stevens IV, the son of a vice admiral, and take them into the 2030s or 40s when the Earth was a member of the Galactic Federation. And he experienced that and then went back and was told, okay, go for it. You know, present this in as a television series. This is the way to prepare people for our future. So this is the kind of information that I think is very, very credible, that in fact the Galactic Federation has been helping us going back to the 1950s, and that our future is one where we as a planetary civilization are members of the Galactic Federation.
So our future basically is Star Trek.
That's exactly right. That Star Trek wasn't science fiction. It was actually a soft disclosure initiative backed by the US Navy. And in my one of my books, actually the last book that you mentioned, Space Force, Our Star Trek Future, I actually have a chapter where I talk about Gene Roddenberry and his association with Leslie Stevens, and that this was where he learned about the Navy's secret space program, and that the Navy was being helped by this Galactic Federation, and that this was something that was a soft disclosure initiative, because you just couldn't come out and say, well, there's a Galactic Federation out there using all of these kind of space-time technologies at that time, because technologically, apparently, we weren't ready. If we weren't ready in December of 2020, in the 1950s and 60s, we weren't ready by a long shot. But we're getting closer and closer. And I think this is why Space Force and the creation of Space Command and the ratification of the Artemis Accords, how now I think they've had 21 nations sign on to the Artemis Accords, that this is all the kind of foundation for Earth forming a kind of like united planetary system of governance that would then make the Earth eligible for membership within the Galactic Federation.
What are the Artemis Accords?
Well, the Artemis Accords are a set of bilateral agreements between the United States and, at the moment, 20 other countries, which includes some of the major spacefaring nations such as France, Britain, Germany, Japan, Australia, Canada. Other nations such as Israel, Brazil have recently signed on, South Korea. So 21 nations in all are part of the Artemis Accords. And the Artemis Accords are designed to foster collaboration between all of the signatory nations in terms of harvesting the resources of space. And also the Artemis Accords has within it provisions for the protection of any activities by member states in space. And they call these regions where member states have ongoing projects in space safety zones, and that any member state that's involved in setting up or working within one of these safety zones can be protected by all necessary measures from any kind of adverse influences. And so that's really setting up the Space Command, where it's not just the United States but a collaboration of the major spacefaring nations. At the moment there's something called the Combined Space Commands Initiative, which integrates the Five Eyes Nations Space Commands or their military space units, the United States, Canada, Australia, Britain, and New Zealand. But they've been joined also by France and Germany. So that is kind of the seed for what will be a future Starfleet. And so it's really being created right now. So the Artemis Accords is like a civilian program set up so that all the signatory states can go out into space either through government programs or through corporate programs where they collaborate, set up safety zones and kind of harvest the resources of space. But they're also going to be protected by this Combined Space Commands Initiative, where the major nations will integrate their militaries into a unified space command. And so this is how they are preparing the foundation or laying the groundwork for, in the future, revealing the existence of what is called by many who have been looking at the secret space programs, Solar Warden, which is a secret space program that was set up and run by the US Navy, but has since integrated with a number of other nations, such as the Echelon countries and France.
So the presence of the Galactic Federation currently on the Earth, around the Earth, are they basically surrounding us, protecting us, from intrusion, from let's say more hostile civilizations?
Yeah, that's currently the situation. It wasn't always like this. You know, there have been more hostile civilizations that essentially had established a very powerful presence on the Earth, but the Galactic Federation has helped bring about a change in the status quo, where those hostile extraterrestrials have pretty much left our solar system to give us room to decide where we are going to go as a planetary civilization. And the Galactic Federation has a number, and you know, here I'm estimating, but I think they probably have several thousand infiltrators or people that have integrated at all levels of society in the major nations on the Earth to really help bring about an awareness and nurture us towards this future where we are going to be part of the Galactic Federation. So they're really trying to help allay people's fears about extraterrestrial life. Yeah, and this goes all the way back to the 1950s, where you had the famous contactees, George Adamski, Howard Menger, Orfeo Angelucci, and many others talking about these human-looking extraterrestrials that were here to help us. So, you know, this has been going on for many generations, and I think we've now reached that point, Richard, where, you know, we are becoming a planet that has a very strong foothold in space. That previously, up until 2019, it was all done clandestinely. It was all done through these secret space programs. But now through the creation of Space Force, these combined Space Command initiatives, through the Artemis Accords, we are projecting our presence into deep space. And this is going to be something that is going to be at a global level, not just secret government programs or military programs.
All right. We will take a quick time out. Dr. Michael Salas stays with us. Exopolitics.org. Exopolitics.org. And we're talking about the Galactic Federation. We'll come back and delve further. Stay with us.
The truth is not out there. It's right here. The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett. From Zoomer Radio.
And we are back with Dr. Michael Sala, exopolitics.org. I mentioned six books in the Secret Space series. There are seven. The brand new one out this May. Number seven is Galactic Federation's Council and Secret Space Programs. Getting back to the, I guess, the purpose of the Galactic Federation. Do they always have, I mean, how are they shielding the Earth from, let's say, hostile intruders? Do they have a large fleet out there that is cloaked, that is basically sort of cocooning our planet?
Well, the way I understand it is that there have been a number of extraterrestrial civilizations and organizations that have been competing for influence over the Earth for many generations. But what's recently changed is that there has been an incursion of a very powerful group of extraterrestrials that are associated with the founding of life, human life on Earth. That they go by various names. Some of they're called the Cedars. They're called the Galactic. They're called the Intergalactic Confederation. Some call them the Guardians. This is a group of civilization which is very similar to what Zechariah Sitchin described in terms of the Anunnaki, that played a role in the seeding of extraterrestrials, going back as far as 500,000 years. And there are other sources as well that talk about these cedar civilizations going back. And they're different from the Galactic Federation insofar as the Galactic Federation is pretty much a kind of military-style organization that tries to counteract the influence of negative races using their military Force. This other group, the Intergalactic Confederation, the way I understand it, they're more or less kind of like the ones that make the rules. They're the ones that kind of set out the rules for how this conflict between organizations such as the Galactic Federation and negative extraterrestrial groups are conducted. And so it seems that what we are witnessing right now is that this is a unique time when, with the return of this, and there have been a number of sources that talk about the return of these fleets of extraterrestrial civilizations that are new to our solar system, that haven't been around for a very long time. And one of my sources is actually currently serving in the US Army. I just use the acronym JP, and he was sent on a mission with under US Space Command. So this was a secret mission that he was sent on with a number of others to one of Jupiter's moons, Ganymede, where Space Command, as well as space militaries of other countries, traveled to meet these fleets of incoming extraterrestrials that were part of these cedar races. So the meetings occurred, and they're here to kind of watch the end result of this grand experiment. Apparently, like, we are part of a grand experiment, and the outcome is something of great interest to the galactics. And either we would graduate into something much greater, to become part of the Galactic Federation and to become like a spacefaring civilization outside of our solar system, or we would implode in a similar way to Atlantis did 11,000 years ago, or 12,000 years ago. So they're here to watch that. And part of the process of them coming here to watch that is that means that nothing can be done in our solar system which is detrimental to human free will. It all has to happen with our own free will. So the negative races have departed. They've left our solar system because, you know, that's what they do. They kind of come in, violate human will in very surreptitious ways, and then they kind of sit back and watch how much damage they've done. So right now, we have kind of like a breathing space where we either implode as a planetary civilization. I mean, very easy to see that right now in Ukraine. I mean, if NATO were to kind of go into Ukraine or Russia was to attack a NATO nation, I mean, you could have like a nuclear war that could very quickly spread. So, and the same with Taiwan. So, you know, what we have is a possibility that the Earth can descend. I mean, as unbelievable as it appears, that the Earth can ascend or descend into a kind of nuclear war that would be very, very devastating for the entire planet and possibly disrupt the viability of life on the planet. Or we can ascend into this like higher dimensional reality where we now become members of the Galactic Federation.
So are we essentially, until we prove our motivations are pure, are we under quarantine?
We are under quarantine isn't quite the right word for it, because we've had secret space programs that have traveled throughout our solar system and have also traveled outside of our solar system and done many things that are not very good in terms of our reputation within the solar system. But as far as the large majority of our planet is concerned, we're kind of like earthbound. Unless you were actually like a mercenary force recruited by one of these negative extraterrestrial groups, you really weren't allowed to go too far into space. So essentially, we're kind of like being quarantined. But now that is, we as a total planetary civilization haven't been allowed to go too far other than just sending up a few landers to the moon. But now, you know, there's been a profound shift because the groundwork has been laid, because there is time travel technology, which is called looking glass technology, where they can foresee where we are going as a planetary civilization. And so the best projections are that, you know, we're going to make it through this dark period, that this is a test. And I think the test is, you know, will we as a planet go down this path of vilifying and doing a cancel culture against other countries and kind of like permitting kind of like unrestricted warfare against a country like Russia, with the world's largest nation by landmass with nuclear weapons? Are people just going to sit back and allow that to escalate? Or are they going to at some point say, no, there needs to be a diplomatic solution to this? Because this, there cannot be a military solution to Ukraine, because any military solution to Ukraine is going to end up with Ukraine being wiped out as a sovereign nation, and it either being controlled by Russia or just obliterated because of some nuclear conflagration there. So there needs to be a peaceful outcome, and that's our test as a civilization, I believe, what we're witnessing in Ukraine. People have to stand up and say, no, this cannot be allowed to escalate. There needs to be a diplomatic solution.
The Galactic Federation, would they prevent a nuclear war? Would they prevent World War III? Because, you know, we've heard since 1966 at least about UFO incursions over nuclear sites in the Soviet Union and in the United States, disabling missile silos and so forth.
Yes, that's been going on for many decades, and there the people that have been talking about how extraterrestrials or UFOs have been disruptive nuclear facilities and missiles for many, many decades. So I think that what that has shown is that they would prevent any kind of accidental nuclear strike or any kind of large scale conflagration involving the superpowers. But I mean, if nuclear weapons were to be used for a kind of like a limited military campaign, I mean, if Russia and NATO go head to head, you know, there would be tactical nuclear weapons used, and I think that would, you know, that would be something that would be kind of like in the vicinity of the atomic bombs dropped on Nagasaki in terms of yield. We're talking like 15 or 25 kilotons, which would be, you know, tactical nuclear weapons. But in terms of hydrogen bombs, I mean, those that are destructive in the megaton range, I don't think they would be used, because they would obliterate entire cities or nations. But certainly tactical nuclear weapons, I think that's a possibility if
they would be permitted. We would be permitted to play around, if I can use that term, with those, but not something that is potentially a planet killer. We'll take a quick time out, Dr. Sala. Back with more in a moment. Stay with us.
The owners of the system are asleep. Now we can play The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
Dr. Michael Sala is with us, a pioneer in the development of exopolitics, and the brand new book is Galactic Federations, Councils and Secret Space Programs. You actually answered my question towards the tail end of that last segment, because I had always wondered, you know, if the Federation has the ability to intervene, shut down missile silos, you know, where were they in August of 1945 when the United States dropped bombs on Nagasaki and Hiroshima? But because those would fall under tactical nuclear weapons, they allowed that, not necessarily that they approved of it, obviously, but they allowed for that. Is that the idea?
Yes, because when you look at, you know, those tactical nuclear weapons, I mean, the ones that were dropped on Japan, I mean, in terms of destructive power, they weren't all that different from these kind of like bomber fleets that were going across Germany during the latter part of Second World War and destroying cities like Dresden, that, you know, they were sending fleets of like 1,000 bombers dropping really incredible tonnage of TNT and destroying entire areas. So those tactical nuclear weapons have a similar destructive power. So they are very similar to conventional weapons in that regard. It's just when you get to thermonuclear weapons that we're talking like megaton yields that I think that's where, and that actually is the case, because I recall in the early 1950s when there was this contactee by the name of George Van Tassel. He was getting information, messages from the Ashtar Command. And he was being told that the Ashtar Command was very firmly against the development of thermonuclear weapons, and that they were warning about the destructive power of these weapons. So they didn't say anything about fission bombs. They didn't say anything about atomic bombs, which had already been dropped. But they were saying that the thermonuclear weapons were the ones that greatly concerned them. So, and I think it had something to do with the hydrogen atom being used for thermonuclear weapons, that they were concerned about a runaway effect, like a chain reaction that could set the entire atmosphere aflame. That was what Van Tassel was warned about. So there's definitely the Galactics or Galactic Federation makes a clear distinction between fission bombs and fusion bombs using the hydrogen element.
You mentioned the Ashtar Command. So can you give us a sense of the, the organizational structure of the Galactic Federation? I mean, you mentioned this other intergalactic group, which are kind of the seeders or the guardians. And then you have the Galactic Federation, which is kind of, I don't know, like the military wing of the United Nations, maybe. But what is the structure? Like, I mean, who ultimately is in charge? Is it democratic? Do they have like a general assembly? How does it work?
Well, the way it works, as I understand it, is that they have commanders. So it's like a military organization, kind of like NATO. Just think of NATO. And you have a supreme commander of NATO. And he answers to or implements decisions by political representatives. So in the case of the Galactic Federation, they look to some of these higher councils that give them advice in terms of what needs to be done. So, you know, there are groups, I mentioned the Intergalactic Confederation. There's other organizations. The Ashtar Command is also a military organization similar to the Galactic Federation of Worlds, but they answer to groups such as the Andromeda Council, the Council of Nine, the Council of Five. So there are different councils out there, and these councils are not military. They operate on a system where they have beings that are kind of more in tune with higher galactic lore, cosmic consciousness. So they are very highly evolved beings that can operate at like the fifth, sixth, or seventh density. So these are kind of spiritual beings that then relay to the Galactic Federation information about, you know, what needs to be done. So, for example, the Andromeda Council, which is a scientific organization, they informed the Galactic Federation that the Earth was being manipulated into providing mercenary forces for one of these negative extraterrestrial groups. And so the Galactic Federation needed to intervene to prevent the Earth evolving down this negative timeline, where we would essentially become a planet providing millions or hundreds of millions of mercenaries for one of these negative extraterrestrial groups that would use our planet as a kind of like breeding ground for super soldiers that would then be sent off to fight in these interstellar wars on behalf of this negative extraterrestrial organization. So the Andromeda Council informed the Galactic Federation that this was going on, and that they needed to come here and counteract what the negative groups were doing here. So that's what's happened.
Ah, I'd like to explore that a little bit further, if we could, in the next segment. If you can tell us more about, you know, which negative ET civilization, I guess, co-opted us, and where our troops were being sent. I don't know if this has anything to do with, is it Captain Kramer, who claims that he went to fight on Mars? But we'll get into that. Dr. Michael Salas stays with us. Again, the brand new book, Galactic Federations, Councils, and Secret Space Programs. Back with more in a moment. Don't go away.
You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio. The truth will set you free, but first, it will really tick you off. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio.
Dr. Michael Sala is with us, exopolitics.org and exopoliticsinstitute.org. The latest book is Galactic Federation Councils and Secret Space Programs. The last segment you alluded to, concern on the part of the Andromeda Council that humans were being manipulated, tricked by some negative ET civilization to send mercenaries to fight on their or alongside them or on their behalf in some other galactic war. Can you give me more details on that?
Sure. Well, this is something I discussed in book three of the Secret Space Program series, where I talked about Antarctica's hidden history, corporate foundations of secret space programs. And I talk about a breakaway civilization in Antarctica that was formed from a number of Germans that fled during the Second World War, that left the occupied Germany, that actually Nazi Germany. They left and formed this breakaway civilization in Antarctica. And this was a result of Nazi Germany having reached agreements with a reptilian species called the Dracos, or the Draco reptilians. And this was actually known to the U.S. Navy at the time. William Tompkins was part of an espionage program run out of Naval Air Station San Diego, where they learned about this. And so it was only after the Second World War that they were able to confirm that this had actually happened. And so as a result of that group, of that breakaway group in Antarctica being helped by these draconian reptilians, they grew in power, and they eventually reached agreements with the U.S. And so the U.S. began working with them. The U.S. supplied manpower, resources, and people, and the Germans in Antarctica provided scientific know-how on how to reverse engineer extraterrestrial spacecraft, because the Germans were way ahead of the U.S. in doing that. So that was the trade, and the result was that Antarctica became a vast industrial hub for building spacecraft that would be used by this German Dark Fleet, as it was called, and that they would go off and fight alongside the reptilians in these interstellar wars of conquest. And they would attack worlds that were populated by humans, because this is the way in which the Draconian Alliance operated. They would use mercenary humans to attack worlds populated by humans, but they would do it in a way where there would first be kind of an infiltration, where the humans would show up and pretend to be good guys there to help them against some imaginary or some contrived force. So it was very sophisticated the way they were doing it.
So, and this area in the Antarctic, is this New Schwabenland we're talking about?
Correct, yes. New Schwabenland was where the earliest bases were built under the ice sheets.
So, initially, my understanding was that the United States was concerned about Nazi Germany and the presence of UFOs down in the Antarctic, and so they sent a force down there, a fighting force. Was that Operation High Jump? And they were defeated, the Americans, by this alien technology. But so if I'm understanding you correctly, they basically then decided to, after they were defeated, they decided, okay, well, let's partner with the Nazis and the Dracos. Is that what happened? Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, there was a sequence there because they were defeated in February of 1947 by this German Dark Fleet out of Antarctica. And so that's when the UFO movements, UFO sightings grew very rapidly in the United States. So Kenneth Arnold, that's a good example. I mean, he saw a formation of nine winged-shaped craft that was operating in Washington State. And that was an example of some of the craft that had come from Antarctica that were now able to overfly U.S. territory. Because Admiral Byrd, he issued a warning when he traveled back to the United States. He was interviewed by a Spanish journalist writing for one of the papers out of Chile called El Mercurio, and he referred to a new enemy that could fly from pole to pole. So essentially what happened was that the Germans, after defeating Operation High Jump, they defeated the best that the Navy could throw at them. So now they began overflying U.S. territory, and they began engaging with the U.S. Air Force. So they gave the Air Force a bloody nose as well. And there's actually, it's documented that President Truman did give shoot down orders to the Air Force to shoot down these UFOs. And you had a tremendous number of Air Force craft crashing. As far as, you know, statistics were concerned, that there were a lot of Air Force craft crashing from the period from 1947 up until 1954. But it was in 1952, you then had the overflights of Washington, D.C., that this was a combination of German craft out of Antarctica and extraterrestrial craft as well, flying over Washington, D.C. on three successive weekends in July of 1952. And then in 1954 and 55, this is when there were face-to-face meetings and agreements were reached with the Eisenhower administration.
That's right. That's when he supposedly slipped away for an emergency dental appointment. But in fact, Eisenhower was at Edward Air Force Base, or where was he meeting?
Well, he went to Edwards Air Force Base, and that's when he met with representatives from the Galactic Federation of Worlds. And they told him to stop the thermonuclear weapons program because that's when they did the Bravo Castle test on March 1st, 1954, which was a 15 megaton nuclear bomb that was detonated in the Bikini Atoll. So the Galactic Federation told Eisenhower, look, you need to stop, put an end to the thermonuclear weapons program, and we'll help you. We will help your kind of technological evolution, but first you need to develop ethically and spiritually. So Eisenhower's national security advisors told Eisenhower, no, don't agree with these guys. We'll work with the other ones. And so they then...
The Dracos, in other words.
The Dracos, there's another group called the Orions, the Orion Collective, or the Orion Syndicate, if you like, that's very similar to what's depicted in the Star Trek franchise as well. So there's a group from Orion, and that they also came on the scene, tall greys from the Orion Collective. And so at Holloman Air Force Base in February of 1955, that's when Eisenhower went to meet with the representatives of this Dark Fleet Orion Draco Alliance, and agreements were made. And this is how then the U.S. shortly after that began sending enormous amounts of personnel and equipment down to Antarctica to help the German space program. And in return, the Germans were helping the U.S. Air Force and the Navy develop their secret space programs.
All right. We're going to roll into hour two and pick this up On the other side, Dr. Michael Sala, exopolitics.org. Again, the new book, Galactic Federations, Councils, and Secret Space Programs. Don't go away.
Live from Toronto, Canada, Earth, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett on Zoomer Radio.
Thanks for inviting me into your home, your long-haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' well-appointed basement with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Ryan White is the live stream producer, and Carlos Cagina is our technical producer. Michael J. Sala. Dr. Michael Sala stays with us, a pioneer in the development of exopolitics, the author of 12 books that include Kennedy's Last Stand, Galactic Diplomacy, and his latest is Galactic Federations, Councils, and Secret Space Programs. This is book number 7 in the Secret Space series, and we are talking about the Galactic Federation. We were talking earlier about that deal with the devil, I guess you could call it, that that Eisenhower made in 55 at Haldeman Air Force Base to go in with essentially the Nazis and their base, their dark fleet in the Antarctic, New Schwabenland, and the Dracos, and the, I believe you called it, the Orion Syndicate. So this is kind of, is this where also American foreign policy goes off the rails and we start to see the CIA involved in coups all over the world, overthrowing a democratically elected leader in Iran, Guatemala, you name it, Allende in Chile is taken out by the U.S. Intelligence apparatus. Is there a relationship there between that deal that Eisenhower made with in 55 at Haldeman and American foreign policy thereafter?
There definitely is a connection. Alan Dulles was the CIA director, and he was the one running a lot of these covert programs, and he was also the guy that made the deals, or he was the one that organized the negotiations between the US and the Germans out of Antarctica. And Dulles's history with the Nazi Party goes back a long, long way. I mean, he and his brother Alan Dulles, John Foster Dulles. So Alan Dulles and John Foster Dulles in 1933 actually traveled to Nazi Germany and met with Adolf Hitler. And they supported German industrialists who wanted to back Hitler to come to power because they thought that Hitler would help Germany industrialize. And so the Dulles brothers had a long association with the Third Reich. And during the Second World War, Alan Dulles actually headed the negotiations between Nazi Germany and the Allied powers, especially towards the end when the Germans were starting to negotiate their surrender. So it was Dulles that was involved in those negotiations. So Dulles was the natural go-between between the Eisenhower administration and the Germans in Antarctica, and he was also the head of the CIA. Now, once the deals were made that the U.S. would send enormous resources to Antarctica and also manpower for the Germans there to build up their dark fleet, there needed to be an enormous amount of funding for that. How could you send billions and billions of dollars of funding to Antarctica without Congress knowing about it? You certainly couldn't ask Congress for, we want you to give us $50 billion to fund the Germans in Antarctica because that's the agreement we've reached with them. You had to do it all off the books. So the way that the CIA did it was that they organized international conflicts and coups and so forth to create cover so that they could raise enormous amounts of money, you know, whether it was plundering the resources of these states that were toppled, organizing a massive drug trade. This is something the CIA has long used to raise enormous amounts of money, pump and dump economics, using international conflict as the means by which you could manipulate international markets however you wanted. So this is how the CIA did it, using these covert programs. And they could raise hundreds of billions of dollars a year without the US Congress knowing about it. And the thing is, the US Congress gave the CIA the statutory power in 1949, under the CIA Act. So the 1949 CIA Act gave the CIA the statutory authority to move funding from any government institution without recourse to law. I mean, that's actually law. They can actually do that. They're the only government agency that can siphon money from anywhere through any federal government entity, and the CIA can then funnel it into the Pentagon. And the Pentagon has the statutory authority to receive money without any explanation. And this is actually the way in which the official black budget operates. There's an official black budget, which is actually and that's estimated today to be about $80 billion. And people who research black budgets that move through Congress, they typically look at the official black budget, which is the money which is intended to go towards funding the intelligence community without anyone being able to keep track of exactly how much the CIA is getting, how much the NSA is getting, how much the NRO is getting, and so forth. But that's the official black budget, which is about $80 billion a year today. But the unofficial black budget is in excess of $1 trillion a year. $1 trillion. Now, currently the Pentagon budget is about $800 billion. So this black budget, which was developed in the 1950s to fund all these covert programs, has always exceeded the budget of the Pentagon.
Right. It reminds me of Donald Rumsfeld just before 9/11 talking about, what was it? Did he say $2 trillion?
$2.1 trillion on September 10.
All right. So all of this money, all of this black ops money, all of these resources being funneled into this base in the Antarctic, are they sending troops down there to go off planet to fight in wars? And do we have like receipts? Can we say, wait a minute, we can show you where there are, you know, vast amounts of, you know, troops being sent to the Antarctic, or how do we know?
Well, Antarctica was more the industrial manufacturing hub, and they also conducted a lot of experiments down there with captive humans. But as far as the troops were concerned, they were sent off planet. They called Lunar Operations Command, and that was an old Nazi base on the moon that was given over to the US in the 1970s. As a result of these agreements, the troops to be trained, to, you know, the super soldiers, they would receive additional training, they would sign papers, they would have medical procedures done on them to enhance their abilities, they would have their minds wiped at the end of their tour of duty, and they would then be sent thousands and thousands of troops at a time. You know, they would either go to places like Mars, where they would serve alongside the Germans in attacking the indigenous Martian civilizations that lived underground there. And they would also go deep into space to serve in interstellar wars alongside the Germans, who were the commanders. And the way it worked was that the Germans ran the Dark Fleet. So, you know, we're talking the senior positions like the admirals and so forth, captains, they would be Germans. But the mercenaries or the auxiliary forces that they got from the US or the French or the British, that they would form the kind of middle core of the officer class. So you'd have majors, lieutenant colonels, commanders operating at that level to kind of like take control of the troops, because you would have thousands of Americans or British or French serving in this dark fleet, and that was the agreement, and that they would serve alongside them. And that was how they would get their advanced technology. So that's been going on for many decades now, and all of this was hidden because the funding for that was all siphoned through different government agencies, and in particular NASA. NASA was the first one, because NASA was the natural to hide all of these secret activities in space. And so what would happen would be that you would have like a recruit at the Marine Corps boot camp. A young Marine gets offered to take part in a covert secret space program. And so this is a young guy and he's gung-ho, and it's like, yeah, you know. So in addition to serving in the Marines for 4 years or whatever, that they would get to go into space. So that would start off. And so they would go and they would sign recruitment papers with NASA. Now, why NASA? You have to ask yourself, why NASA? Well, NASA at the very beginning was run by the Germans, at least the Apollo program. And that's actually fact. That's verifiable, because the Kennedy Space Center was run by a former Nazi, Kurt Debus, who was a general in the Nazi SS. And then the person running the Marshall Space Flight Center, which was in control of the overall Apollo program in terms of resources and how they were to be spent and allocated and so forth, was Dr. Werner von Braun,
right?
Another Nazi.
All brought over through Paperclip, right? Operation Paperclip.
Exactly. So that was the cover. Operation Paperclip provided the cover for thousands of Germans to come in and occupy senior positions in the aerospace industry, so that they could then funnel all of this money to the Germans in Antarctica. And in exchange, these German scientists from Paperclip would then receive all the scientific know-how from their compatriots in Antarctica and would then funnel that through to the American scientific institutions and corporations and so forth. So it was very beneficial for the Germans in Antarctica.
How do they account for all of these missing soldiers that went off planet? If they were killed, I mean, they just disappeared. Didn't their families wonder what happened to them?
Well, you know, those that were killed that didn't return, they could easily be explained away as having done covert missions for national security purposes, and their families would receive a letter saying your son died performing service to the United States military and he's a hero and so forth and so forth. And that's very easy to do for people that sign up to covert programs, because these people, these recruits, when they're approached, and I've spoken to people who have gone through this process. I mean, you know of Randy Kramer.
Yes.
There are a number of others. Michael Gerloff served with the U.S. Marine Corps. There have been many others that went through a very similar process, that they join the Navy or the Marines or the Air Force, and at boot camp they get approached. Then they're asked, do you want to be part of a covert space program? And, you know, the high 95% say, yeah, for sure. And so they sign papers. So they've signed papers that they are now going to be performing service for a covert program. So if they die during that program, then, yes, the U.S. military will send a letter saying that your son performed covert missions for the military and unfortunately died.
And if they live and they come back, their memories are wiped. Are they not wandering around wondering what happened to me the last 3 years or whatever? There should be thousands.
Well, the technology was so good that they could wipe out the memories, so that essentially, you know, they join the military, they get approached early on by an officer, you know, in boot camp. If you're a young recruit, you get approached by a captain or a major or something. They said, I want to talk to you. we've noticed you. And so you get approached and they say, well, do you want to sign? I mean, do you want to be part of this covert program? And they say, yes. Okay. So as soon as they say yes, then they're taken out of the room, taken off to Lunar Operations Command, where they sign the papers and so forth, and they perform their service. And if they survive to the very end, 20 years, then they're kind of age regressed, and then their memories are wiped, and they're taken back in time to the precise moment when they joined. So essentially then what happens is that they are then back in the office of that officer, and the officer has just finished saying, do you want to join? Will you be part of this? And they say yes. And then, you know, they get up or whatever, and then they're kind of like back in the room, and their memory is hazy, they're confused, they're disoriented, and the captain will say to them, okay, we're done. You can go back to your squad and complete your training. So now they go back to their boot camp and they complete their training. And, you know, because boot camp is so intense, it's the perfect cover, because you can't, you know, mess around and think, oh, man, well, I have these strange memories. And, you know, you're at boot camp. You know, you've got to do whatever is required for you for that 3 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it is. So it's the perfect cover to, you know, recruit people, take them off planet. They do a 20 and back, and then they come back, and then they go through boot camp, complete it. This is... You know, there are many people that have described a very similar process.
So meanwhile, all this money resource is going one way. What is the technology coming back and into whose hands is it going?
Well, the Air Force was the main beneficiary, and the CIA and the National Reconnaissance Office, both created separate space programs, and the Navy had its own space program. But as I mentioned earlier in the show, the Navy was always working with the Galactic Federation. The Navy never really worked with the Dracors or with the Greys or the Orion Alliance. The Navy monitored what was going on with the CIA and the Air Force, working with these groups, but the Navy was never part of those agreements. The Navy always worked with the Galactic Federation. So this was the way in which it was all set up. But the Air Force and the CIA, the National Reconnaissance Office, they were the ones that benefited most from the secret agreements and the collaboration with the Draco Reptilians and the Orion Greys, because they developed their own secret space programs using anti-gravity technologies, nuclear propulsion systems, torsion field physics, and so forth to propel their craft. So there's craft like the TR-3B. That's been kind of like the main kind of showpiece of the Air Force secret space program for many decades now, since the 1980s, that they had that. Whereas the Navy had kilometer-sized space carriers, because the Nordics or the Galactic Federation were more interested in helping the Navy get up to speed with the state-of-the-art interstellar spacecraft, whereas the Draco Reptilians and the Orion Greys, you know, they weren't interested in the U.S. Air Force or the NRO or the CIA kind of like having the best stuff. They were giving them second-hand or third-hand stuff. And so this was something that the Air Force guys got, and they thought that they were the tip of the spear. But eventually they discovered, once they learned that the Navy had its own secret space program, yeah, they were furious, because they thought they were the tip of the spear. But they realized that they were, in essence, really just a kind of planetary coast guard. And that really pissed them off.
Well, wait a minute. You've got – so – it seems to me that that's a recipe for civil war within the United States. You've got the Navy that are in league with the Galactic Federation, just in terms of shorthand, I'll call them the good guys. And then you've got the Air Force and the CIA in league with Dracos, the Orion Syndicate, let's call those, you know, the black hats or the bad guys. How, I mean, at some point they're going to be working at cross purposes, aren't they? Aren't the, you know, the Galactic Federation not seeing eye to eye with the Orion Syndicate and the Dracos. So, I mean, how did that not create, I don't know, a perfect storm for like a civil war in the United States, or at least, you know, the Air Force attacking the Navy or what have you?
Well, it was different functionalities. I mean, the Navy's Solar Warden program operated in deep space, and they were working with the Galactic Federation, whereas the Air Force and the NRO, because they only ever got spacecraft that were capable of maybe flying to the moon, missions to Mars, but they weren't genuinely interstellar craft that could travel to the ends of our solar system. I mean, the Air Force and the CIA and the NRO, they were deliberately not given those technologies, but they were given technologies so that they could kind of monitor and control the cislunar region, which is the region around the Earth where the moon orbits. So, you know, anywhere around 350,000 kilometers outside of the Earth, that was pretty much under the control of the Air Force and the NRO and the CIA. They monitored all and worked closely with the Dark Fleet that also had bases on the moon. Now, the Navy, they monitored all of that and they kind of piggybacked on some of that, but they were able to keep a separate program and they were very careful not to do anything to kind of lead to outright conflict with the Dark Fleet, because that would be detrimental to everyone, because the Dark Fleet didn't want a civil war in the U.S. because as far as they were concerned, things were working fine for them. You know, the United States was this industrial behemoth. It was capable of building vast numbers of spacecraft using modern industrial production methods. And you didn't want to disrupt that by any kind of civil war. And the Navy, of course, didn't want to create a civil war either, because they knew that the Air Force was working and the CIA and the NRO was working with the Draco reptilians, because they wanted to kind of see what was going on. Because very early on, the Navy was put in charge of the whole extraterrestrial phenomenon, not the Air Force, because the Air Force was the junior service. It only came into existence in 1947. But the Navy, because it had expertise on running integrated aircraft carrier groups, it knew how to develop space carrier groups.
Okay, so the Navy, here, pardon the interruption, Dr. Sal, I've got to take another time out. We'll come back and discuss further. Don't go away.
Question everything. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett on Zoomer Radio. Conspiracy Show with Richard Sarrett from Zoomer Radio.
Back with Dr. Michael Sala. When did the United States go all in with the Federation?
Well, the Navy has always been working with the Federation, and that has just grown over the decades. And I think a certain point was reached when it was decided that the Federation could like step up and take direct action against the Draco reptilians and the Orion collective. And that really happened probably in the last 5 years or so. That seems to have been when, you know, there was this kind of a transition that for various reasons, we had reached this point where we could throw off this dark alliance or this dark fleet, that it wasn't necessary anymore, that whatever was being gained through that association, I think what the Navy was waiting for was that we would reach a certain point of technological development as a planet where now we didn't need the Dark Alliance anymore, and that they could be kind of like thrown off. And I think that's really what happened, and that was something that people within the kind of military, covert military, agreed to, that yeah, it was time to kind of throw off that yoke and begin working much more with the Galactic Federation to kind of move to this new stage where now there would be like a full disclosure of what is going on, and that meant that the planet needed to be unified. And so, you know, those groups that were bringing about disunity, creating havoc on the planet, they needed to be booted off. So that's when the Galactic Federation began like taking a much more energetic approach to expelling the Draco reptilians and the others by destroying their underground bases and so forth.
Just quickly, the alien abduction phenomenon, was that part of the arrangement that the Air Force and other branches had with the Orions and the Dracos? In exchange, they gave them permission, I guess, to collect genetic material or whatever they were doing in exchange for technology. Was that part of that agreement?
That was part of the agreement with the Orions, because there's a group called the Orion Greys, and they made their own separate agreement. So you had the Germans in Antarctica working with the Draco reptilians, making agreements with the Eisenhower administration. You also had these Orion Greys making agreements with the Eisenhower administration. And they were different because the Orion Greys were much more into abduction and genetic experiments. So they wanted to abduct humans for conducting these genetic experiments because that was something that they valued for a variety of reasons, whereas the Draco and the Germans, they were more interested in mercenaries. They were more interested in super soldiers. So they really weren't into the whole abduction phenomenon. So you've got different alien groups there.
So it would stand to reason then with the Federation basically coming in and kicking out the Orions and the Dracos, does that mean that as of 5 years ago, at least the negative type of alien abduction, if there's, you know, if there's a negative and a positive, but the negative type of alien abduction ended basically 5 years ago?
I believe that it has pretty much ended. I mean, there's still some groups that might be practicing these abductions, but as far as I'm aware, that those abduction experiences have pretty much concluded because the Orion Greys that were behind it have been forced to leave our solar system for the time being. You know, now they might come back at some future stage, but you know, the legacy is that there's a lot of genetic hybrids now on Earth that are in some way sympathetic or connected with the Orion Greys. So there's kind of like a fifth column now on Earth of beings that identify in critical ways with these off-world groups. David Jacobs, I think, has done a really good job in describing the abduction phenomenon and how it has now moved to this new phase where you have these genetic hybrids that have reached a point now where large numbers of them can be on Earth, can infiltrate, and can actually influence our progress as a civilization or our public policy in important ways. So it seems that, you know, these negative groups, even though they've been forced to leave the planet, they still have in place a lot of kind of fifth columnists, a lot of assets that still continue to work with them. So, you know, I think this is the way they work, because as I understand it, these groups, the Dracul and the Orion Greys, they're masters at infiltration and subversion. So while their military have left, you know, their kind of espionage or their political operatives are here.
Any idea how many in this fifth column hybrids there are?
Well, you know, that I would have to defer to David Jacobs, but I think he's made some estimates of, you know, there's been millions of abductions in the United States alone. Now, as a consequence of that, there have been these hybrids created. Now, you know, I would be guessing as to how many are here, but I know that the Galactic Federation has several thousand on planet Earth, so I wouldn't be surprised if you had kind of like yeah, maybe not as many as that, but certainly a significant number, maybe in the hundreds or a few thousand of these hybrids, of these gray extraterrestrial hybrids.
And are they in communication, telepathic or otherwise, with the Orions? And are they, I don't know, are they conspiring to bring the Orions and the Dracos back?
Totally. Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. The Orions and the Draco have left the planet, or left our solar system, but their assets, their genetic hybrids, are here. And in many cases, these hybrids, while they might have a human-looking body because their genetics have been altered to incorporate the human genome, there's enough in there in terms of gray or reptilian genetics where a gray or an Orion gray or a Draco can incarnate in that body. And so they are the ideal operatives, because now they're in a human body and they can pass unnoticed in human society, but you actually have a Draco or a gray, Orion gray, in a human body, and that they identify, I mean, they still communicate with or connect telepathically with their cousins in wherever they're hiding now, and whether it's somewhere in our solar system or outside our solar system.
Now that the Galactic Federation is basically the dominant off-planet force, and the Dracos and the Orions are in off-planet and in exile, why do we still have, I don't know, some people call them the Illuminati, or whatever sinister force is out there that is trying to institute some kind of dystopian future for mankind, if you want to call it the Great Reset, the Davos crowd, and so forth? Are they in allegiance with the Dracos and the Greys, or who are they?
Well, they're the former minions of the Dracos and the Greys, and because they are known to have worked with these groups for a long time and did many terrible things to subvert human society. I mean, the crimes that they've committed are kind of like unspeakable, a huge litany of things, that many people can recite much better than I, but certainly these are the minions of these groups. And once these groups decided to leave Earth, the minions were left. They weren't taken. So they had everything to lose if all of this was exposed, if there was disclosure and the truth came out about, well, you know, agreements had been reached to allow abductions of hundreds of thousands or even millions of people from all over the world, that, you know, that there were these horrible experimentation projects happening all over the world where people were subjected to horrific abuses, you know, treated like lab rats and so forth. So these minions, they didn't want to give up power because they knew that they would basically be exposed and, you know, they would face a terrible consequence. So they're fighting as hard as they can to maintain as much power. But the big problem that they have is that their extraterrestrial allies that provided them the superior technology, the looking glass technology, the projections and the power to kind of like outwit the the Earth, or the positive guys, the Earth Alliance, if you call them that, or the White Hats, they're gone. They've left the planet. And now it's the planet's surrounded by these more positive extraterrestrial groups. So the Mingans are fighting. This is their last stand, which is why things have become so dire, and it's so obvious, because anyone looking at the policies of what has happened over the last 2 years is that, you look at 2019, how many people believe that there was a world elite trying to subjugate the population for nefarious purposes? Probably you would have had the tinfoil hat category of maybe 1% of the population. Well, now maybe there's like 30%. A majority of Republicans believe that, that there's a sinister deep state that stole the 2020 election, that has done all these things in terms of the COVID and the vaccines and all of that, and that they are steering humanity down this very dark path. So, that's now mainstream. And that's only happened because these minions are desperate. They have no way of stopping this awakening that is happening now.
All right, another time out awaits. Back with more of Dr. Michael Sala. Don't go away.
When in doubt, blame the government. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
Galactic Federations, Councils, and Secret Space Programs. That's the brand new one from Dr. Michael Sala, exopolitics.org. Again, how do we get a copy?
You can go to amazon.com or visit my website, exopolitics.org.
When you listen to the Davos crowd and their version of the future, this whole you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, and there'll be smart cities and stacked housing, and everyone will be riding around on mono rails, no private cars. We're going to transition away from dirty fossil fuels or hydrocarbons into renewable energy. I mean, their version that they're offering up almost sounds like Star Trek. I mean, are they deceiving us, or?
Yes, it is deception, because really what they're doing is they're bringing about a transhumanist agenda where they want to turn us into cyborgs, where they can control every aspect of our lives. You can imagine. I mean, look at what's happening now on social media, or platforms like YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, where anyone that dissents from the mainstream narrative gets booted off. They get censored, or they get deplatformed, or they can't make money through PayPal, or Stripe deplatforms them. So that's what's happening now. This is only a taste of what would happen. Imagine if you had a truly transhumanist agenda where people have implants that are put into them, and that's the only way that you can use the subway, or you can get on a plane, or you could kind of access your paycheck or whatever, that you have to wear this chip, and then you're totally controlled. The people that control the technology, they control you. They could at any point deactivate that chip and make it impossible for you to buy food or travel, or they can deplatform you from anywhere where you're kind of spreading your information. So that's where the New World Order crowd wants to take us. It's very far away from the kind of utopian Star Trek future that Gene Roddenberry was putting out through the Star Trek, which really was acknowledging human freedom and civil liberties, and promoting a peaceful interaction between people, not because you were superimposing an all kind of Orwellian superstate through advanced technology that would monitor every thought, every action that we do, but it would be because people would be lifted out of poverty, where their basic human needs were satisfied, and now it's only higher order needs like self-actualization and self-realization that become important for people.
Do the does the Davos crowd have the looking glass technology?
Definitely, yeah. They've had that. They've had that for a long time. I mean, they were probably some of the first ones to get their hands on that technology. But the problem that they have is that, you know, their technology can only look ahead in terms of probabilities. And if they're looking ahead and they, you know, they're trying to nurture a future reality that, okay, that they get to bring about this kind of like Orwellian super state where people are controlled by chips and the transhumanist agenda is the dominant way in which humanity lives all across the planet. You know, that maybe that had a possibility of 30% of coming into fruition. But now, because of everything they've done, now it's got like 15%. And this is the problem they have, that everything they try now, you know, whether it's coming up with a new contrived, a new false flag operation, you know, rather than enhancing the possibility of their desired future outcome, it diminishes that. Whereas the possibility of a future, of Star Trek future, because of all of these failed policies, you know, like they've, you know, like coming across with this, you know, like the, with the pandemic and the plandemic, you know, that's awakened so many people, doctors, the medical community, who, you know, before this happened, you know, none of them would have been interested in this whole kind of Star Trek future and secret space programs and so forth. Now they're kind of like much more open to this stuff because that's, you know, their logic takes them to this place. Well, why is this being done? So now that future possibility has gone from maybe, say, 40% to now 70%. And everything that the deep state does, you know, they look at their looking glass technology and say, well, let's try this. Let's do...
Well, to affect the timeline, to alter the timeline. Yeah.
Everything that they try to alter the timeline backfires. So, you know, this is their dilemma. So even though they have looking glass technology, it only looks at future possibilities. And you can try and do something to bring that about. But if your future possibility only has a likelihood of like 30% or 20% of coming about, and you do something to maybe strengthen that, you'd end up doing the opposite.
All right. One final time out. We'll be back to finish up with Dr. Michael Sala. Stay with us.
The truth will set you free. But first, it will really tick you off. You're listening to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio.
A few minutes remain with Dr. Michael Sala, exopolitics.org, the website, Galactic Federations, Councils and Secret Space Programs. Once again, Dr. Sala, how do we get a copy?
You can just go to exopolitics.org. That's my main website. Or just go to amazon.com and type in my name and you should get the whole Secret Space Program book series.
So let's take a look at where this is all heading. The Galactic Federation, they've chased off the Dracos and the Orion Syndicate. Their foot soldiers, I guess, call them the elites of the Davos crowd. They have looking glass technology, but they're losing. They're getting increasingly desperate. Their vision of a sort of dystopian future, not likely to happen, as more and more people awaken. So where is this headed? Is there a timeline for the Galactic Federation to make themselves known? What are the signposts along the way?
Well, that's a fascinating question. There are a few people that are in contact with the Galactic Federation that are some of the sources that I've been interviewing. And, you know, they've given me estimates that we're talking 2023 is going to be a really critical year for all of this breaking, that this information is not going to be withheld for that much longer, that we're not really looking at too much time, I think, for some of this to start coming out. Now, they might begin with some announcement, like the James Webb Space Telescope has detected techno signatures and, you know, in some distant solar system, and that extraterrestrial life has been found in a distant solar system, which would really be a kind of like an ideal way of breaking it to people in a way that would not be too disruptive. And so then you've opened the door. Then it's just a series of more announcements that, oh, okay, well, contact is being made with some of these groups. We're communicating with them. in some other solar system. And then they can say that, you know, that actually they've arrived, that they're here. I think what we won't see for some time is that any admission by government or by military saying, well, the extraterrestrials have been here for 70 years and we've been covering it up from you. That they're not going to admit that, because that would destabilize things. What they're going to do is try and frame it all as something brand new, that Space Force or US Space Command has encountered as a consequence of new technology that has just been brought online, where Space Command has these new anti-gravity craft that allows them to go far into our solar system, has found on the moons of Jupiter the remnants of an extraterrestrial civilization. And so I think that's what we can expect. That'll be kind of like a leading up, because I think the important thing about, you know, the way I would contrast the White Hats, the Earth Alliance, with the deep state crowd, is that while the White Hats and the Earth Alliance want the transition to a Star Trek future being a smooth and harmonious ones, the deep state, the dark hats, they wanted it to be a very disruptive one and full of surprises and twists and turns that would shock and confuse people. But that's not the way in which I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen in a way that's well thought out and planned to gradually get people up to speed, where you begin with some announcement that extraterrestrial life is real, and then you kind of and then you start releasing some advanced technology, because that's going to give people a lot of confidence that, well, you know, we've got Space Command, Space Force, that has this really cool anti-gravity torsion field propulsion systems that enable them to travel throughout our solar system really quickly. That'll give people confidence, because that's one of the key things that the military wants, that, you know, they don't want to disclose the existence of extraterrestrial life and lead to a collapse in public confidence in the ability of the Pentagon to protect American citizens from extraterrestrial life. That they want people to believe that the Pentagon has within its resources the means to protect Americans from anything. So they're going to roll out the advanced technology. They're going to declare extraterrestrial life exists out there somewhere. And in the process, they're going to build up public confidence that, well, you know, we've got these really cool space technologies that Space Force is deploying and that Space Command is using. And then I think you're going to have an acceleration of announcements that extraterrestrial life is very real. And they're going to say that, yeah, we've made contact. Contact has recently been made with this Galactic Federation.
In terms of rolling out the technology, I mean, if we're dealing with spiritually evolved entities here, it's hard to imagine, though, that they could sit back and watch people, you know, suffer from cancer and all sorts of different diseases and, you know, famine and starvation. What is the timeline for why aren't they rolling out this technology like now, yesterday? And what types of technology are you hearing about?
Well, there are advanced technologies, healing technologies that are being developed. That these are being prepared for mass distribution once there are some major disclosures that happen. I think that the only roadblock at the moment is this kind of Davos crowd agenda, that these minions are doing everything they can to disrupt things. Now, one of their big sources of revenue is the pharmaceutical industry. And the pharmaceutical industry has prevented a lot of these advanced technologies from coming into the public arena. I mean, you only have to look at the US Patent and Trademark Office and know that almost 6,000 patents have been withheld under national security orders by the different intelligence organizations in the United States. So that's 6,000 inventions that the majority of those deal with things like and healing that have been suppressed because some corporation or some intelligence group says that this is something that would threaten national security if we release this into the public arena. So this is what's been going on for going back to the time of Nikola Tesla in the early 1900s. So these advanced healing technologies have been suppressed because of the power of the pharmaceutical industry to shut down people and to twist the curricula and the research priorities of universities. I mean, every university in the major country, I mean, pharmaceutical industries have penetrated them, where professors are given grants to do studies on, you know, this particular cocktail healing people and that. And anyone wanting to do, well, you know, well, what are the benefits of herbs or kind of like juicing or kind of electromagnetic healing technologies? Those things are blocked from any kind of research grants. If you try and write a paper for a peer-reviewed journal, the editors will block you from doing that because, you know, you get funding from the pharmaceutical industry. So in someone will lean on you and say, no, you can't publish that paper. It's unscientific. And so that's why these advanced healing technologies have been withheld for so long. So the whole pharmaceutical medical complex is corrupt to its core, and it has to be changed tremendously. And doctors' curriculum needs to be changed incredibly quickly as well, because, you know, they've just been trained to be the bag man or the middleman for the pharmaceutical industry.
So it's Star Trek, here we come, and I'm not sure, we don't know exactly the when that will arrive, but it's going to begin in earnest in terms of gradual disclosure in 2023. Dr. Michael Sala, thank you so much for hanging out for the last 2 hours.
It's been a pleasure, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Exopolitics.org and Galactic Federation Councils and Secret Space Programs. All right, back next week with the great-grandchildren of Jesse James, and we'll talk about hidden gold and other treasures with Daniel and Tessa Duke. In the meantime, don't be afraid. There's nothing concealed that won't be revealed and nothing hidden that won't be made known. Would you hear in the dark, speak in the light? What I say in a whisper, proclaim from the housetops. Move over, Aphrodite. I'm coming home. Good night.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.